I think you should. Elise Colley is going to join us soon. There's a remarkable story behind her rise. In fact, she's joining us now. This incredible rise through the world of competitive shooting rifle, the gun of choice. I'm not sure it was necessarily her first choice from a sporting pursuit, but she's become one of the very finest in the world at it, and was probably right about now really starting to get ready to think about getting to Tokyo. That's all been put off for a year, and Elise Colley has been good enough to join us on the show to tell us her story. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you going?
We're going okay. Tell us about the emotional journey you've been on in the last couple of months, qualifying, obviously in terrific form, and then finding out that, you know, because of the virus, we won't be getting together as an Olympic family until at least next year.
Oh, look, obviously going through selection processes, it was quite stressful. You know that, you know, if you do well, you're going to be representing your country at the highest level. So everyone's looking forward to it. And then after the selection events were over, there was a couple of days before the AOC announced that if the 2020 Olympics were to go ahead, that they would boycott it. So obviously then there's a lot more, you know, unknowns. No one knew what was going on. And I think it was quite a stressful time for a lot of people. But at the same time, I was at home. I was safe, healthy. All my friends and family are safe and healthy. So, and, you know, you're hearing all these stories about people passing away, people who can't attend funerals, you know, yeah, all these things going on in the world. So while obviously you're stressed about what's going on, I really struggled to even think about it at times because it was just, this is so much bigger than sport. It was obviously a bit stressful, but as I said, I really hardly thought about it, to be honest.
That's an amazing perspective, Elise. I imagine the contemplation of going to Olympic Games, in terms of all the things that you've done in your life, it would have been, you know, it would have been as significant as anything I imagine that you've done. And to have that perspective at the end of, you know, where we find ourselves is, it's a credit to you.
I think it's probably credit to my parents. You know, look, every positive thing that anyone's ever said to me, big thanks to my parents. All the negative things, that's on me. But yeah, right.
So how do you plan for the next... How do you plan for the next 12 months? You've done everything, you know, with obviously getting to Tokyo as the end point. I mean, qualify, get there, and then perform. Now that you know that's not happening, have you had a chance in this time of isolation to think about what the next 12 months looks like?
Just more training when I finally can, I guess. At the moment, haven't done any training at all. Haven't touched my rifle since I got back from qualifiers because a couple of days after I got back, all the ranges closed. So it's mainly just, I guess, mentally preparing yourself for when you do come back. Because I think without having, you know, obviously there's still, we know what we're training for, but the goalposts have moved. We can still see them, but it's just, I think it's, some people find it a bit hard to get motivated for something, you know, so far away. But yeah, for me, I'm just, you know, taking it one day at a time, doing what I can, little things here and there, so that when I can get into full training mode, I'm better off than when I was going into it.
Elise, with the Rangers shut down,
yep,
are there other ways that you're able to train, and what are they?
Yeah, so there's this a machine called a SCAT machine, which basically you just attach it to your rifle and then it uses lasers and stuff to work out when you pull the trigger and nothing comes out, it's just air, but it will tell you roughly where it would have gone, which is obviously good. You know, you can work on your holding and see things from that perspective. But there's obviously also the physical stuff that we can do. There's a lot of balance training everyone's doing, cardio and stuff. So we're still doing stuff. It's just very different to what I guess we all thought we would be doing at this stage.
I'm glad to hear there's some technology for you. Otherwise, I was going to have to point you in the direction of the old Duck Hunt on the Nintendo, which would have been, I mean, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, but, you know, at least it would have been something. But can I ask you about, I imagine the psychology for a shooter, much in the same way for golfers with putting. What's your sort of process in sort of calming yourself before competition or during competition?
To be honest, I don't really think about it. I think the more I think about it, the worse my performance will be because I hype myself up too much. And obviously, you know, you want to calm down as much as possible. You don't want to be freaking out or anything. So I just really, you know, I just treat it like a training session, I guess, where obviously with a lot of sports, you know, your training is different to game day, but with shooting, you're doing the exact same thing. So for me personally, I just think about it as a normal training session, and that's what helps me. Obviously, other people are different, but that's how I go about it.
Talking to Elise Collier, Australian shooter who will be going to Tokyo in 2021 to compete in the rifle event. Hey, Elise, we're led to believe, I don't know much about your backstory, but we're led to believe you're a pretty handy junior cricketer, and it was a mishap playing cricket that led you to discovering shooting as a way of kind of almost rehabbing your way out of what happened to you on the, and your dad might have had a bit of a role in all of that. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, so I played cricket for probably 8 or 9 years, you know, state level. I was very into my cricket. And then one day I was at training. We're just doing a normal drill, a fielding drill. There was a bit of a mishap. One of the kids, he dropped the ball, picked it up, went to throw it back to my coach, and it went straight into the back of the side of my head. So I fractured my skull, didn't know it at the time. That was on a Thursday. Saturday, I played 2 games. Sunday, played another game. During the game, I just bowled an over, walking back to my fielding spot, and just everything went black. I just collapsed. Got taken to the hospital, found out that I had a fractured skull. And, yeah, so this was back in 2011. And, yeah, I had really bad headaches as a result of it. I couldn't focus on anything. All my grades just, they dropped off the charts completely. I couldn't really hold a conversation because I couldn't focus on anything being said. And I was just struggling with, you know, everyday tasks. And then late 2014, so 3 years later, my dad, he suggested that I take up rifle shooting because obviously you learn all these techniques on how to focus on one thing, how to stay concentrated, and, you know, just get everything else out of your mind and how to calm yourself down. And he thought that, you know, if anything, that could help towards my headaches, but even if it didn't, it's just, you know, a useful thing for everyday activities. The exercise, the techniques that I've learnt through shooting, I use every day. You know, I can read a book now and actually understand what I'm reading, whereas before I could read one sentence. I can have a conversation. I've learnt a lot through shooting, and that's how I got into the sport.
That's an extraordinary story. That's an upset. So did they ever work out, obviously the fractured skull, but did they work out what led to your collapse and then the concentration issues thereafter? Was there something else that had taken place that was diagnosed later, or was it just kind of a broad kind of general after effect of the collision that you'd sustained, or the impact that you'd sustained?
No one really knows. There was a lot of other things that happened as a result of it, but the main thing obviously was the headache. But, you know, you go see all these neurologists and everyone says, you know, the brain is the most complex thing. We don't know.
Yeah.
Which obviously was a bit hard. I was only 13 at the time and finding out that they didn't know what was wrong with me. But, you know, I think it could have been so much worse. I'm still alive, so just move on, I guess.
you're definitely that. We will move on. When did you realise you were good? Well, you pick it up at 2014 after you've been through what you've been through. When did people around you realise that you're pretty good at shooting a gun?
Within a year of starting, I got asked to go to nationals. I had no intentions of going, but I got asked by coaches to go because they thought I'd do all right there. And then obviously just started working my way up through that. And in 2017, I started doing the Olympic discipline, which it's not very different, but, you know, you're using different equipment, there's different rules. There's, instead of having a scope on top, it's heat sights. It's a lot harder. And then just worked my way up through there and made it here, I guess.
Give me an idea as to where you sit in terms of other shooters at the club that you're a member at, competitions you go to. How old are you now, Elise? It must be early 20s, are you? How old are you now?
Yeah, I'm 21.
So how many other 21-year-old girls are there out, or young women are there out there that you're competing against?
There's actually quite a few. It sounds weird, but I'm one of the oldest people in the rifle in the rifle area. So when last November we had the Oceania Championships, which is obviously Australia and New Zealand and then all the other island countries around us. And in the air rifle final, I was the oldest person. So
what?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Wow. I find that hard to believe, to be honest. I would have thought that shooting would be sort of mid-30s, into your 40s type, you know. I would have thought that I know nerves would, you know, as Bob was saying before, I know that the nerves will kick in at the end. And once they start to go, you're probably in a bit of trouble. But I would have thought that you'd need to probably be an extra 10, 15, maybe even 20 years older than you before you kind of reach your prime.
I think that's what a lot of people think. You know, you imagine just like old 6-year-old blokes with shooting guns. It's very different from that.
Hey, Elise, I've got a bit of a rat problem in the backyard at the moment. I know the social distancing, but if I there's a bit of a bounty on them. When all this passes, would you mind taking a couple of shots to try and clear the decks for me?
Just laugh at him, Elise. He's under a bit of pressure at the moment. I don't know whether you know much about Dice Footy League, but he's under a bit of pressure at the moment, Bob Murphy, so he's prone to sort of ask these slightly oddball questions every now and again.
Rats in the backyard, rats in the corridors of DFL, that's all I'm going to say.
Rats in the rigs. Hey, before we let you go, there's two things that Benny, our producer, is telling me about. One, that you wear odd socks in competition, so you need to tell us about that, if it's true or not. And is it true that you're quite adept at riding a unicycle?
Look, I wouldn't say I'm excellent at it, but I do all right.
Okay.
That was an impulse purchase. I don't really know why I have a unicycle, but once I got one, I was like, well, I got to learn to ride it.
That's great.
I've actually been doing it a bit lately because there's nothing else to do, so I've just been riding the unicycle around a bit.
As you do. And what's the odd socks thing? Did that just sort of happened by accident one day and you went all right and you've stuck with it? What's the story there?
So I don't know. I just have this issue with wearing matching socks. I always have odd socks. I have a left sock drawer and a right sock drawer.
Neuroses of the athlete brain.
But when I shoot, so I have quite small feet. I'm a pretty small person. I'm 5'1", but I've got size 2 children's feet. So, but the smallest boot shooting boots they make are the equivalent of a size 5 or a 6. So, I wear 4 pairs of socks. So I have 8 socks in there. All different.
That's fantastic. See, there's another preconception that I had, Elise, that I would have thought to be a good shooter, you'd need to have big feet. So you've got a nice balance, a nice base upon which to sort of plant yourself. But you've got tiny little feet, so, you know, you're perfectly fine. This is another myth about shooting that has been debunked today.
That's not a myth. That's one of your just hair-thrown ideas.
Hey, Elise, I'm happy to say this on behalf of everybody involved in this show. You are one of ours. You are right in our wheelhouse with some of these crazy things that are going on in your world. But we love everything about you. Hey, great to hear your backstory. We're so glad that your old man found a way to encourage you back into, you know, participation the way he did. And it's had such a positive impact on your faculties, and it's led you to where you are now. And we're better for hearing your voice. And I'm going to be very, very interested watching, well, far more interested watching the rifle at Tokyo than I would have been beforehand. Thanks for coming on the show and all the best.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good on you. Elise Collier joining us. Well, there's one. Every now and again, you just find them, don't you? That's a great young Australian right there, I reckon.
Yeah. There was a speckled text that she was a Weet-Bix kid. Elise sure is a Weet-Bix kid. Great.
She sure is, Bob. She's a Weet-Bix kid. A break. There's heaps more to get through. Feel free to join in 1-300-736-736. Particularly when we get to Jersey Boys 43. We got a couple in there. We need a couple more. So feel free to get involved once we get there.